When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Matter Private Network.
On News Talk.
A new study by the University of Ulster has revealed the shocking extent of referee abuse in Gaelic games. 94% of the referees surveyed have experienced verbal abuse. 23% reported physical abuse. Joining me on the line now to discuss this is Kilkenny-based referee and commentator Martin Quilty, founder of the Silent Sideline campaign Antonio Montero and soccer coach at Bonage United FC, Cathal Doherty. And Martin, let me start with you. Given the stats of 94% of the referees having experienced verbal abuse, I assume the answer to this is yes. Have you experienced it?
In 26 years, yeah, a lot, quite in that amount of time, predominantly at underage, which even makes the stats more worse if they were to delve into it and see exactly the breakdown of it. But it has been a problem, it still is a problem, and obviously by the new survey or study that was brought out there with the lads, you can actually see it, that it's quite a big problem at the minute, with 94% saying that they have received abuse, whether it be physical or verbal abuse. And the simple answer is, and I've been asked this over many, many years, what the solution can be to it. And the real answer is, I haven't got the answer, because people have been trying it. I was talking to Sinead earlier on about the silent sidelines. And, well, I think it's a great idea and a great initiative. The problem with how do you police something like that, because, I mean, I'm a chairman of my own club at home as well, and if I go up to somebody and tell them, look, you can't be abusing a referee and whatever, you're going to be told to F off fairly quickly and mind your own business. So, I don't know is the simple answer, but yeah, it is a big problem. And in 26 years, I've experienced both verbal and physical abuse. So, yeah, the study is grim reading, to be honest with you.
Is it frightening when it happens
it
to you?
It's very frightening. I mean, I probably started off when I was a young lad at 13 years of age, referee, and I gave up hurling at under 14 level to take up the whistle, because I enjoyed the refereeing a bit more. So when you're doing your first games, my first experience was at an under 12 game, because I started refereeing in Waterford first, because there was no underage leagues at the time in Kilkenny. So I was doing matches in Waterford, and my first experience was physical abuse. I was only 14, and I had a parent come up and dig me in the back as an under 12 game inside. Like, so, you know, parents can be really, really, I suppose, irate, and they get nearly too involved in games when their little Johnny or Mary is playing in games. So it is quite frightening, especially even when you are an adult and someone comes up, like, and you're getting physically abused by them. It's a frightening experience, and you're shook after it, I can tell you, for a couple of days.
Does it ever cause you to think, why am I doing this?
Several times over, to be honest with you. You really think, like, why the hell would I be going out here? Why should I be putting it in? And lads are saying, you're getting paid for it. But, like, are you really? I mean, you're barely covered in travelling expenses going to a game if you're over an hour that away for it. You're basically putting yourself out there. You're getting abused for the good part of an hour to an hour and a half, if it goes to extra time or whatever. You're often at games on your own. It's not too bad if you're going to a championship game, whether it be adult or whatever, and you'd have a couple of umpires or linesmen or whatever there with you. But predominantly, you're at a venue on your own, and it is a scary experience. I can tell you, if you have grown adults or lads even with foam coming out of their mouths, which I've experienced on a couple of occasions as well, and they're coming for you. So Yeah, it is. To be honest, it is a frightening experience, and I wouldn't wish it on any of the younger referees. And I suppose that's why we can't retain referees either, because they are getting abused when they start out first, and they're thinking to themselves, "Well, to hell with this! I'm not putting up with this every time I go out," and they just retire or they resign or hang up the whistle or whatever you want to say it. And it's becoming a bigger problem now to get referees in every county in Ireland.
Well, you mentioned the Silent Sideline campaign. The founder of that was Antonio Mantero, who is Castleknock Celtic coach. But I assume the same approach applies, whether it's soccer or GAA that you're refereeing. Can you explain, Antonio, the Silent Sideline, how it works and what effect it had from a referee's perspective?
I suppose how it works is it's a weekend where children are allowed to play their sport without having the added noise coming from the sideline, the added stream of verbal abuse in some cases, in a lot of cases, and also just the constant stream of instruction, which is actually just thwarting the decision-making of most of the players on the pitch. So the idea is that they're allowed to play the game without having the added instruction coming from the sideline, so they can move from mistake to mistake without even realising it, and the game just seems to flow much better for the children themselves. And you just ask the coaches that, you know, they coach when the game is stopped, so they really stand back away from the sideline so that they don't get so emotionally involved. And the same for the parents, you know, they need to stand back away from the sideline so they're not getting emotionally involved in the game.
Are they able to do it? Are they willing to do it?
I think we found, when clubs participated, and you know, sometimes it's not even clubs, it might be just teams within clubs, they found that the game has flowed much better. It's been a much more enjoyable experience for everybody, from the coaches to the players and the players themselves. And I suppose it's just another way of highlighting how your line and how the culture of your sideline you want it to be for the coming season. So, you know, it sends out a strong message to parents that, you know, they need to come down, absolutely support, you know, be involved, but, you know, just stand back. They don't need to be to verbalising and passing on their instructions or their views on the game. And in most cases, you know, a lot of parents haven't even played the sport themselves. So, a lot of what the instruction or the things that they're saying are probably contradicting what the coach is saying. So, you know, then the child or the player just becomes confused in the decision making.
Well, speaking of coaches, one of them is with us, that being Cathal Doherty. Cathal, will people listen to what Antonio is laying out there about the Silent Sideline and say, but look, part of the enjoyment of games for the players, for the spectators, is roaring, shouting, supporting your team, and to a certain degree, hurling banter at the opposition and at the ref?
I can agree. What I've heard so far is, I think everybody's familiar with it, and the Silent Sideline, I've employed it myself, and it's interesting. Yeah, it is a novel idea at the time, and the people slip back into their old routine. And again, yeah, when you're watching a match, you like to get involved, and how do you get involved is by being vocal. It's the same when you're on the football pitch. How do you stay involved in the game? You're vocal. You have to be vocal, and so it is part of the enjoyment. But again, it's the abuse element. What is being involved in the game, and what renders as being abusive? Like, we have Shelburne visiting us this evening. They're up to play Bonnygee in the last 16 of Senior Cup. Will there be verbal abuse towards the officials tonight at the game? I guarantee you there will be. I guarantee you there'll be upwards of 700 people there. Can we police every individual there? We cannot. Us as a club, and us as a committee, can we welcome Shelburne to the club? Of course we can. Can we do everything in our powers? Of course we can. But we can't legislate for every one of the 750 people that will be there.
Well, can I read you a text on that note, Cathal? Because yes. One came in saying, look, regarding GAA referees and abuse from mentors, in recent years it has really gotten out of control. Also, opposition mentors are beginning to interact negatively with opposition players, currently prevalent at an underage level, even to the point of sometimes becoming physical. The GAA needs to be more proactive. Protect the referees, protect the players. It takes away from the enjoyment of the game. Bring in behavioural courses if needs be, and ban these idiots if the behaviour is persistent. The GAA needs to act. Could you not chip away and erode this behaviour if people became clear on the idea that once you get caught doing it, you're turfed out of the ground or off the side of the pitch?
And that happens. It does. I mean, players, coaches have been removed from games. This season alone, I've had four occasions we've had officials or, opposition coaches, parents having to be removed from the game, being stopped, and parents being removed from the field of play. It happens. It is there. The education piece, it's really important, education piece. But again, it starts on the pitch. It starts with the players. You can see it. Like, look at Tyrone and Armagh, or Galway and Armagh this year. If the players can control themselves, that feeds into the younger players watching, the young people watching it. That's the behaviour, and it's almost celebrated. How often do you hear? Yes, we can control it at the sideline, but you can have the sideline, but it's that car journey home. It's the parents talking to the son. You didn't get stuck in. It's almost celebrated that aggression, that physical, because I mean, some of the incidents on the pitch, it's abuse, it's physical abuse. It's in any other context, it would be a legal matter. It's a common assault, but it seems to be acceptable on a football pitch. And you talk about abuse to the referees. I mean, I had an incident, and I was going to come on here and say, listen, it's not as prevalent in the soccer, but I read in that report that it seems to be more prevalent in the soccer. 22% of soccer referees experience verbal abuse in every game, as opposed to 10% in the Gaelic. So, but I had an incident even this last week. I was travelling with one of the players, and he was explaining to me how he was verbally abused by four adults at the back of the goals. Now, this fella is 15 years of age. I was almost being a psychologist to him in terms of how not to internalise that, in terms of how to view the abuse and how it's more a reflection on the four individuals. Like, grown men verbally abusing a 15-year-old. Now, this guy, young fella, he's a big lump of a lad, but he's still 15 years of age. He's immature. And the mental health, and I see in that report as well, and it's very important, we talk about the mental health of referees, and I see that, they are like 13% of those are screening positive for distress during the week, and anxiety and depression. That is a huge problem. I mean, where's the human element there when we are on the sideline and we're, do we challenge the referees? Do I challenge the referees' decisions? Yes, I do. Do I verbally abuse them and do I make it personal? No, I do not. But it's a very difficult thing. I know your previous talk there was the Church of Social Justice. Well, the Church of GAA. You're talking about human traits here, and when we get together collectively, it's very hard to step away and be conscious, self-conscious of how you're behaving, and to self-regulate. That's very, very difficult, and it's something that you'll never get a handle on. Well, it's going to be an element of the game, but as you said, yes, we do have measures. We do eject people from the ground, but you know what? We're not robust enough on that.
Your experience, or the experience you granted of that 15-year-old being abused, yes, standing the goal, but that goes a lot to what Martin was saying earlier on of his own experience being 14 and being physically abused when he was refereeing under 12.
Absolutely.
Can I go back, Martin, then to you with a suggestion come in by text that says, let's not kid ourselves, the abuse of referees goes on in all sports, not just soccer and GAA. I've seen referees getting abused at schools and club rugby. We need more adults refereeing juvenile games and penalties awarded for any abuse until we hit clubs hard with serious fines and bans. Nothing will change. Martin Quilty, is that the ultimate answer, that the clubs need to know if it is your supporters who are abusing a referee, it'll either cost you a penalty, it'll cost you the game, or it'll cost you money?
It probably will, Anton. I mean, how exactly do you control every member that's there? I mean, your previous speaker was talking about soccer and members turning up to a stand. I mean, okay, stewards can hear us, they can evict someone out of the ground, and it might be the same at a GAA game, but as I said, it's very hard to prove it, and a lot of the problem goes as well with the players. I mean, if you send somebody off for verbally abuse, and they'll go and they will appeal and appeal and appeal and get off on technicalities and etc. I mean, we've had it recently at the Camogie level, at inter-county level, where one player was sent off for verbally abused, and the referee went to appeal on the last day and played the last two games of the season, and then came out on national television and said that what she actually had done, even though they went and appealed it. So, I mean, there has to be a lot of responsibility taken on the players as well. There's not much point in a referee doing his job, going and sending in his reports and everything else to go with it. And then there's players and there's managers and coaches appealing it and getting off on technicalities. Like, that doesn't help the referees, and the referees are fed up with all the black or the red tape and technicalities and players not taking responsibilities, etc. So, I mean, you could probably fine clubs as well, but, like, realistically, is it going to make any difference? I mean, the club will go and appeal it and say, oh, Johnny or Timmy there is not a member with us, and we can't...
how can we be expected to control something? And yeah, it's a free country.
You know,
it's interesting, that thing about the personal responsibility. Interesting text saying, I made my 18-year-old son apologise to a referee who he swore at. The guy shook his hand and thanked him. I said to my son, that guy's a volunteer. He turned up to make sure you could play your match. We still have banter, but abuse is not acceptable. It needs to be spelled out to players. 53106 at a cost of 30 cent if you have a view on this. Big thank you to Martin Quilty, to Carl Doherty and to Antonio Mantero, our guests there on that item.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.